It's Cofield and Company, live from the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
All right, Griffin's back in the Finley Toyota studio this hour in Southern Nevada and Northern Nevada, brought to you by Paddleborn Injury Lawyers. Call from anywhere in the state, 766-1400. In the north, 775-766-1400. Adam Hill, Steve Cofield. Much to get to. Oh boy, this is going to be... I try to have Friday as a no-conflict Friday. This is going to be a very conflict-filled, I think. Big four, so let's get to it.
Battleborn Injury Lawyers presents The Big Four at Four. Number four.
I know Adam well enough from doing shows with him for the better part of 15-plus years that when he sends something over, there can be a trigger in there. Michigan did get penalized. Jim Harbaugh did get penalized. Others did get penalized. Adam's slug on this was Michigan gets penalized. Everyone can move on now.
Yeah, it's over. It's actually not, because there's clearly some inaccuracies and mistakes in the report, so Michigan has appealed some of the factual stuff. Yep. Look, did they do this? Yeah, they did. Did they stop it before it really mattered? Yeah, they did.
I don't believe that.
I mean, they did. So...
I don't believe that.
Okay.
I mean, one... Well, first of all, there are fans... Of course, this was... the Michigan State newspaper said, I don't know why Michigan fans are celebrating. The NCAA handed out punishment, which confirms you cheated. Your title is tainted forever. But you don't believe it affected the title year?
No. No, the title early.
Okay.
But not when the games mattered.
The games mattered early.
Sure.
The games mattered. By the way, the cheating also matters in the previous seasons because it helps you get players for that season. It helps you retain players. It helps you get transfers. Success at a certain level does help you. So it has some effect. And you will, I mean, I knew as I was watching two of the games that I was personally involved in Michigan season, that the UNLV game, not like they weren't going to beat them, but it could have been a competitive game, but they absolutely knew a lot of the UNLV plays and what was coming. And the same thing happened with the Rutgers game. Greg Schiano at the halftime was like befuddled and had this weird conversation with a sideline reporter. He was like, something's happening. We got to figure it out. And I know when I talked to Odom's vibe was the same thing. He's like, what the hell is happening right now? We got a lot to figure out at the half, because they could see it. Their offense was being completely read by the Michigan defense and the brilliant sign-stealing scheme that was put together by Connor Stallions.
It was brilliant.
Rubber-stamped by Jim Harbaugh. By the way, recognized by coaches all over the staff. So, I guess we can move on. Go to number three.
Number three.
My biggest problem is with the penalty. One, Harbaugh's got now a combined 14-year show cause. It doesn't matter.
Right.
He's old, and he's not going to coach outside the NFL again. Why is Sherrone Moore still coaching? He's got a 2-year show cause, so they're just going to do, like, baby steps and just suspend him every year? He was totally involved. One of the things he did was he erased, like, 60 texts and then said it was a storage issue. It wasn't a storage issue. They were Connor Stallion's texts. You erased them. We know you did it, which means you were part of the conspiracy. What is this nonsense? And he's still coaching.
What do you want him to do when his phone is full?
Oh, stop.
You know, delete apps?
I knew you were going to do this.
You're going to delete apps?
Totally ridiculous.
It's crazy.
I have to do it all the time, but I never get rid of important texts.
I'm just like, delete.
He knew what he was doing. So he gets to stay around.
If they want to get rid of Sean, fine. They'll find another guy.
They will find another guy. I know. And listen, he was part of it. We know the guy Chris Partridge at the very beginning was part of it. Some questions out there include the NCAA saying, well, this is a comment. The NCAA says that Michigan case would have resulted in a postseason ban, but avoided in large part because of the changing landscape of college sports. I don't see how the changing landscape makes a hill of beans. They also said a postseason ban would have unfairly penalized student athletes for the action of coaches and staff who are no longer associated with Michigan football. Well, that is true, but guess what?
It is
Friday, a week before the season. You know what you can do? The postseason ban, which they don't have one. They have a postseason ban on the money they'll get.
Yeah.
But the postseason ban could start next year, which means that they can play for a playoff berth and the title this year, and then everyone knows what's coming, and everyone can leave. That's a penalty with teeth. The next 2 years, 26 and 27 could have postseason bans. Would they still have a team and be good and competitive? Probably. But every kid there, they're not getting penalized. They have the choice after the season. You can leave.
There wasn't a full playoff when this happened, right?
No.
So you want something that didn't exist.
Oh, stop.
So you really can't do that.
That's ridiculous.
Did they do this? Yeah. I also feel like Connor Stallions came up with this, and everybody's like, oh, okay, that's cool. And then they let him do it.
We know what happened, and I'm glad you're not pulling whataboutism. I thought you were going to start mentioning other schools.
First of all, that is the ultimate to this, right?
Because yeah, I understand.
Everybody wants to freak out about it. Your school's probably doing it too.
Yes.
So,
but guess what?
You better come with the same energy then.
My school and other schools haven't been caught. This to me is exactly reminiscent of, say, San Francisco Giant fans. You're right. There were probably of 650 Major League Baseball players when Barry Bonds was at his peak using Balco. Of the 650, there could have been 500 who were hopped up on stuff. They didn't get caught. And also, Bonds went to another level, just like McGuire, just like Sosa. And I don't mean level on the field, a level of skirting the rules. You got caught. That's it.
The other
speeding tickets. I haven't got a speeding ticket in a while. Do I still speed? Yeah. I've been lucky. But I can't get mad at a speeding ticket and go, oh, everyone else is doing it. Like, I've just been lucky lately. Yeah, I understand. People steal signs. But this was, it was so next level. Like, there's an acceptable level. This was
really good at
ridiculous.
The other part of this is it does sound like, and if you've watched any of the background, if you watch documentaries, anything else, like, you understand what they were doing, and you also understand that there's other programs that most likely violated legitimate federal law as a part of this.
Well, hopefully the feds go after them. Hopefully the feds, if Ohio State did help out Michigan by hacking into computers. Listen, don't even get me started on Ohio State, because if Ohio State fans want to go tit for tat, I can do the whataboutism because I'm not a Michigan guy like you are. What Ohio State did with that Dr. Quinn from 1977 to the late 90s is so much worse than cheating at football. That school rubber stamped and ignored and turned heads when a guy, one, raped a college hockey player, allegations, two, hundreds of male athletes across six sports, this guy sexually assaulted them, violated them. And Ohio State is still fighting the settlement. Basically, I think just hoping everyone dies.
Yeah.
But that started with the wrestling program, and it was part of the football program, and coaches were told that was a systemic breakdown at Ohio State. That, to me, that's death penalty. Now, that's not going to happen.
No.
That was horrendous.
One of the schools out there trying to, this isn't enough. Okay. That's fine. It's a major penalty. A lot happened. They clearly violated rules. I don't think it had anything to do with winning a title. But they clearly violated rules. Got a major penalty for it, as they should.
But you're laughing all the way to the bank, because the penalty could be $20 million. It's postseason monies. As you joked before, if they needed $20 million, what would happen?
They'd take $20 million. Larry Ellison would give them $20 million.
Google Larry Ellison would give them $20 million. The money means nothing. And I saw SEC.
I hope Larry Ellison wrote a $35 million check today.
I don't doubt that he did, yeah. SEC homer Pete Burns from ESPN said, kind of sad to say this, but it was worth it, right? And he's not a Michigan guy. He is bought and paid for, seems like, by the SEC. You're right, because there is no penalty. There is no penalty. So it is worth doing it. Michigan makes out like bandits. What do they care? It's money.
It sucks that people say whatever they're going to say, but
people are forgetting.
You actually look into it at what's true. They weren't doing this when the games matter. And I know you can make the case like you used it to recruit, you played good to get better recruits, and then like games that they won to win the title, they did not do this.
We went through number two. Let's get to number one. Top story.
Number one.
Very interesting development. I didn't see this come public until the last couple days about Mike McDaniel in this offseason. We talked about Mike McDaniel with the Dolphins, and that it seems like the team is kind of out of control, and the nerdy, that whole act. ain't working right now. He doesn't seem to be respected by his players. Tyreek Hill's consistently a jackass. He was at the end of the year last year. He's already made comments about who should play and who shouldn't at different times. Colin Cowherd had strong comments on McDaniel and what he views as the Dolphins as kind of a wishy-washy sinking ship.
Mike McDaniel, not a guy that holds people accountable, fun-loving, the snarky hipster. They're a top five penalized team since he's been a coach of the Dolphins. So yesterday, the Dolphins had a practice with the Lions. A linebacker for the Lions, Grant Stewart, said, "I don't even know if they practice how we practice." You can't be a bowl of Jell-O. That's what Miami is. A lot of movement. No meat in the sandwich.
All right, Adam. No meat in the sandwich with your nerd head coach.
Yeah. Yale guy.
He's been to how many practices?
Touche. Okay. Often what I say about people commenting from afar about NFL practices.
It's very easy. And this is part of the thing we talk about all the time with, like, why people don't do analytics. Because then you start to get this nonsense. And, like, you can't act a certain way because clearly you're not tough, or you don't act as exert discipline over your team or whatever. Like, when you're not around, you don't know. Everything I know about him from people who, I don't know, have known him for 25 years, say that's not who he is. That don't judge his interviews by how he actually is on the field. And, like, but this is what we do. This is why you can't be different, why you can't coach different, why you can't have different ideas, because this starts to happen. Again, it's not true. Is it not correct they've made the playoffs two of his 3 years?
And they win when Tua's healthy,
and when
he's upright.
When Tua plays, they win.
But you have to admit, he doesn't help his cause with his delivery. It is odd. I understand what he's doing. And there is proof with the pudding that there are players who have not responded to him. Now, he said back in January, this is Mike McDaniel, the Dolphins head coach, if your actions continually lead to finable offenses that you're telling me without words that you don't want to be here, we'll address those as such. And Dolphins tight end Tanner Connor at the beginning of camp said, well, we did see some guys go bye-bye. And he said it, that we see players respecting him more now. So it had to be an organizational thing. It had to be a McDaniel thing. It did get loose last year. And the problem is, your best player is a horse's ass. And why they didn't move on him, probably because his value is at rock bottom. I think even getting nothing back for him is still addition by subtraction. I don't know why he's still there. I still think he's going to be a headache.
Well, I mean, I think as long as he's on the field and Tua's on the field, they're a playoff team. Like, they've proven that. And the way he acts and everything else.
But can he deal with adversity? There's going to be adversity, Tyreek. You can't act like a child and freaking undercut your coach.
Yeah. They need him to not only play well, but act well and help out Tua. And we've already seen some tough relationship, I guess, between him and Tua even this offseason.
Yeah. I love that, so. Tua is kind of drawing the line in the sand. Like, sorry, dude, you're not forgiven. We're going to get to USC 319 coming up. Right now, William Hill, you can bet the main event. Shamayev at 220. Duplessis is back at plus 180. And they got all the fights up at William Hill. And remember, Pro Pick'em Contest is back. Get you in the action for all 18 weeks of the regular season. $25 entry fee. You just pick the winning teams. No point spreads. Over $1.2 million in cash prizes. For more information on it and to get into the contest and download the app, William Hill, US on the web.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Adam Hill is here. We haven't had a chance to talk to Adam about UFC and its next barrier-breaking TV deal. Paramount Plus, $7.7 billion. Let's listen to a bite from the beginning of the week with Dana White and his excitement about pairing up with the relatively fledgling Paramount Plus. But, you know, UFC's got a history of doing this.
I love where this is headed. I love the idea of being on Paramount Plus. You know, when you think of these streaming services, live sports is so important because you have to tune in and watch it when it happens. And if you look at the moves they're making right now and the content that they have, they just locked up South Park. Yet they have Yellowstone, Mobland, which is a big hit. Tulsa King, and the list goes on and on. So not only if you're a UFC fan, you get away from the pay-per-view model. Now you just pay, you know, $12 or $13 a month, whatever it is, and you get all this other programming plus all the UFC content.
I saw you smirking, so what'd you have in there?
Was that, because it was funny, because that was not McAfee, right?
No.
Because I could tell it wasn't McAfee, but I also could tell it was the exact same thing he said.
Yeah.
Like he had kind of a script.
At no point did Christy Nome text him and go, South Park. Yeah. Don't mention that.
Stop talking about South Park, man.
They're against us, Dana. What do you think of the choice of Paramount Plus, and was it shocking?
It was a bit shocking. I mean, it's not shocking that they went streaming. I think everybody assumed that. I think there was even some sort of assumption that they would go away from pay-per-views because, you know.
Have they been doing well on pay-per-view? You don't get the numbers.
Well, I don't think they care. I said for a long time, I don't think they care.
It's so much money.
Pay-per-view.
Yeah. That was a way to monetize it in the past. It's kind of archaic at this point. Now when you're guaranteed $1.1 billion a year, that's the mother load. I mean, their last deal was for $300 million, which with ESPN, which compared to, you know, the reason I said throwing to that cut, they have a history of going with someone who is growing. I mean, initially they were paying Spike.
Right.
But they grew with Spike way back when.
I think there's still a lot of questions. Like, what does this do for fighters that have cuts of pay-per-view in their contract? I'm sure a lot of fighters are thinking that right now. Like, wait a minute. How does that work? I think a lot of fans are left. While that's awesome, you're going to get to see every single fight. That's cool. What motivation do you have to make better fights? Like, all this time we've said, like, hey, you're going to get the fights everybody wants to see because, you know, that's what they do, and they need to do that for pay-per-views. Well, what's the motivation now? And I'm sure that what they'll tell you is it's, you know, to continue to build the brand and to get the next deal even bigger and better. But really, there's not a motivation. There's just not. It's to work with their partners and provide their partner all that, but that's in the end, that's not that much. So I think it leaves a lot of questions. It's, on the surface, it's great.
Well, like you said, for fight fans, the cost is going to be lower than ever. But on the flip side, will you get mega fights? Are they going to be incentivized to put together great fights, retain good talent? Right? Yep. Obviously, Francis Ngannou is kind of the flashpoint where I don't know what Francis was making. If I was to estimate, say he's getting $1.5 million a fight, and he's like, hey, I want five or six. We're like, well, that's good. Goodbye.
Yeah.
Like, is that going to be the same deal moving forward when you have even more guaranteed money?
In the future, like, a guy like Francis Ngannou who would say, like, I want this because, you know, I'll sell this in my next fight. Like, you'll stream it? Then what good does that do us? Okay. Fine. Go. Like, and then I'm sure that they would tell you that's not going to happen. I'm sure that they would. But we'll see when it goes into practice. We'll see when there's a negotiation. We'll see when, you know, if some other guys go. And now, you know, maybe there's not another place to go. That's been the case for a lot of time. You know, does a guy want to go make more money fighting in PFL than they would? Although eyeballs are going to be on them in UFC, maybe. We'll find out. But, I mean, these are the questions that are still going to be worked out. Because on the surface, again, on the surface, it's very easy to say this is great for everybody. But the reality is we will see.
What did you make of the report from Ariel Helwani that John Jones actually was offered upwards of $30 million to fight Tom Aspinall, and then 2 days later was like, I think I'm out. And now he's back. Now he wants to fight at the White House card.
Sure.
I don't know if that same offer is on the table.
Yeah, there's no pay-per-view.
Yeah. Well, I also can't imagine them building a card around John Jones and not having him pay the same money because I think he'll just be like, yeah, well, then I'm out. But, I mean, if I were him.
But hold on. What's the problem building a card around John Jones?
What do you mean?
Like, in the past, we would say you can't build a card around John Jones because he might pull out, and then what? Okay. Who cares if you pull out now? You don't have pay-per-view to sell. What does it matter?
Well, you would assume if CBS is going to put on four cards a year, CBS will ask for some good cards.
Sure they will. But, oh well.
Dana White doesn't have to reward them.
Right.
Now, I think that happened along the way with ESPN, but that happens along the way. At the front end of a deal, you would think that they're going to reward CBS with some mega cards if it does cost them a little more money up front. I would think that would be the way to start off a good business relationship. Once they got into the middle, what was their deal with ESPN? 2017? And then COVID hits, and then ESPN's completely desperate to get fights on. So at that point, I have no idea what happened with ESPN. And and the USC, but things did seem to change in terms of matchmaking and retaining named fighters for millions of dollars.
Right. And so we'll, you know, we will, again, I think there's a lot we'll see, because I do applaud on the surface the fact of, all right, it's all streaming, pay-per-views go away, everybody's just going to get to watch all the great fights. Like, that would be great if there wasn't this concern of what does that mean for the big fights. And also the, hey, this doesn't mean we're not going to do a pay-per-view at some point. Like, what does that mean? Like, I mean, I think that means boxing, but Dana White said, hey, everybody's saying that pay-per-view is over. It's not, like, that's not
never,
the case.
You never know.
Yeah.
Might be a fight here or there.
Tell me, so what does that mean? And then potentially you do have to build a star and then, you know, build a pay-per-view around them. And that could be different. And then what do you say to fans that are like, I thought I was buying all the pay-per-views. What happened?
You wait a couple of years.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah. I do want to find out. And like you said, I think for the next year, 2 years, 3 years even, you've already got some stars that are pay-per-view worthy that, hey, like, this is going to be a really good card. Even though it's just streaming, it's still going to be good. But what does it do? You know, that 4, 5, 6 year of this deal, what are the pay-per-view, quote-unquote pay-per-views looking like? Premium live events, I guess they're called. Numbered cards.
UFC 319. I think this is actually a pretty good card.
Me too.
Main card has Aaron Pico on it. He's down about 20 cents. That's an interesting choice, but they want to showcase him. He's down to 170. Cannoneer and Michael Page is intriguing. Minus 210 on Page. What do you think of that one?
Cannoneer looks jacked.
Michael Page looks tall.
Michael Page is very, very talented.
He's a long guy, yeah.
Incredibly talented guy. Is that a Tajay Spears? I don't know.
Well, Falcons just threw an interception.
Oh, defense.
Good news, it's not Michael Penis.
Whoa. Kirk Cousins.
As they called him on CBS affiliate in South Carolina. It's Penix, local affiliate, Penix.
Kirky Chains.
He's not playing. You're right. So it is Kirk Cousins. So trade value going down by the second with Kirk Cousins.
I also saw was a guy streaking down the field. I thought it was offense. Happen. I didn't know it was a pick six. Good. Not a good throw.
No, it wasn't.
Good pick, I guess.
Wasn't.
Just kind of stepped in front of it and ran.
Sure. Other fights on that card. Well, first, Cannoneer and Page. What's going to happen?
I think Page knocks him out.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
He's got a lot of explosive strikes. I just think he's too fast for Cannoneer.
Kaya scores 330 against Tim Elliott. Female fight on the undercard. Loopy and Andrade. That's a good one.
I've never been against Jessica Andrade.
And the main event, DDP, Trickus Duplessis against Chimaev. Chimaev's moving up from 170. It's a big jump, you know, 85. Is he that good that he's going to be big enough at that weight?
First of all, he's never been a 170-er. He's always been 85. I mean, he's fought at 170.
Is he 192 walking around, or is he 207?
He's going to be way over 200.
Oh, yes, he's that big,
yeah,
okay.
For sure.
What happens here? Because every fight this DDP is in, people are like, oh, he's awkward, he's weird, no takedown, he's going to get steamrolled in this one, and he keeps winning.
Yeah, Chimaev is just a different animal. I don't think I'd ever pick Drickus Duplessis to win a fight. I don't think I'd ever want him to win a fight. I don't think I'd ever want him to succeed in life. But he's really good. He's really, really talented and always underestimated, as you said. I just think Chimaev is on a different level, and there's just so many ways he can beat you. When he gets his hands on you, he's so strong. I don't love laying that price for a guy, you know, against a guy like DDP, who has been so successful and can win in a variety of ways, but Chimaev's just different.
Would this weekend be one of the bummers of you not being on or a regular on the beat anymore?
I'm a big Chicago fan.
I know you are. I figured.
That's all right, though. I mean, it's kind of a one-fight card, so.
By the way, correction, number 12 through the INT, not number 8. Easton Stick, who's over from the Chargers,
okay.
Yeah, he threw the INT. In the last minute here with UFC, when they go to Paramount, what happens to all their ESPN content? What happens to all the ESPN personalities?
Great question.
Where are all those podcasts going? Because while people are like, ESPN sucks, no one watches, like, their platform is good. They have good podcasts. They had you know, their MMA show is good. Is all this new programming going to be introduced on Paramount Plus or somewhere?
We'll see, because, I mean, a lot of UFC produces a lot of stuff themselves and just distributes to ESPN. But I think Cormier and Sonnen, at least, and we, obviously, you know, our friend Brett is ESPN employees. So it will be interesting to see how they manage that. Like, I think, look, Anik doesn't go through ESPN anyway on his stuff. So, yeah, I think that's a big part of this. And what does ESPN do in terms of coverage? Probably very little, if any.
Big sportsbook news to get to in the state of Missouri. And what I'm really interested in is they had two standalone licenses. They awarded those. We'll tell you who got them. But there is expected to be other players in the market. And the notion is that one of those sportsbooks could be pairing up with a sports organization. Which one would it be?
Live from the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island, it's Cofield and Company.
We're going to talk to the head of the book here at Treasure Island. Just a couple minutes from STN, Chuck Esposito. There's big sportsbook news as more and more states come online with sports gambling. Kansas already had it, right? In fact, I know they do because I have an account, at least one account there.
Yeah.
Missouri finally jumped on board. Dumbasses. So, especially since, you know, border state there with state line, you may want to get the money, all that tax revenue that Kansas is getting. So they're in. They only gave out two licenses. They're called untethered licenses. DraftKings and Circa Sports got one. I guess this was a big upset because FanDuel and DraftKings are the two biggest around the country, but Circa got in Mizzou, and Derek Stevens said, quote, "We came in as a long shot against national giants, but our licensure today proves there's room for a different kind of operator. It's a win-win." Or he said it's a win-win-win. Three wins.
Wow.
For Circa, Missouri regulators, and most importantly, Missouri consumers.
Oh, that is three. Win-win-win. That's the best kind of negotiation. It's a win-win-win for everyone. It's going everywhere. It seems like we're only...
Not everywhere.
We're only going to have like two or three spots that don't. Or I mean, it's a 38 or 39.
When are Texas and California, like two of the biggest bangers out there, are going to get their acts together?
It'll happen.
You sure?
Yeah.
But the other Dan Patrick, I mean, he's... any kind of vice, man. Those edibles, he's mad.
He's not going to be there forever.
He's mad.
Well, he might with gerrymandering, but yeah, he's not going to be there forever.
Okay, well, the thought is FanDuel's still going to get in, but they would do that with a partner. Like, it could be a professional sports franchise.
Sure.
Okay, I don't really understand this one. And how is that widespread, and who would it be?
Yeah, I don't know.
Royals, Chiefs? I mean, both are very much in gambling. The NFL, of course, you know, since saying for years and years and years and years how evil we were and sports gambling was the worst thing on earth, now that they're involved and getting basically a direct cut, I know it's a licensing deal with ESPN Bet by name, but they're in about as much as you can get in. Why wouldn't teams partner up with books?
Yeah, true. And, well, I mean, I guess the issue is aren't the Chiefs and Royals both moving to Kansas?
That's a good point.
So I guess how would that work?
Don't know.
I guess
that's why it's a win-win-win-win for Circa over FanDuel. But you know what? FanDuel may already have something in the works, and they could be folks at FanDuel who are like, these guys are jabronis. Shut the hell up.
Potentially. Yeah, I mean, there are very few frontiers that have not or will not be crossed in the sports betting realm. It's expanding greatly, and it's very tied in with all the sports leagues and all the sports teams and everybody else and the owners and everyone, and there's no such thing. I don't know if you've got this memo. Like, conflict of interest is not a thing anymore. It doesn't exist. It's not a real thing. Now, I still believe it is, but in terms of how the world seems to view things, I don't think they care anymore.
We're probably one of the only shows in the country who started talking about this 5, 6, 7 years ago when the NFL really got in deep with sportsbook partners. You can watch games and go, well, that decision helps the league because it helps their gambling interest.
Right.
You can watch replay, and I mean, I'm not a big conspiracy theorist, but I will listen to it on this front.
Well, also, perception is reality in some ways. So
sometimes.
Even if the NFL if the NFL never impacted a single call or a single decision based on money or betting or anything else, if you stand to make more money in the betting world, if a call goes one way or another, and it goes that way, even if you had no intention of doing that, even if nobody even knew in the booth what it was, the perception that you made money based on a call that was wrong, that helped you, is not good for anybody. It's not good for the integrity of sports. It's not good for bettors. It's not good for anybody. And you can't allow that to happen.
Well, for the sports books, that Missouri carrot is gigantic, because right now they're all going through a living hell in Illinois because of regulation. So the more of these gooby states you can get into with very casual bettors like Missouri, Kentucky, I almost said Nashville, and Tennessee. I understand Nashville is not a state. Tennessee is the state.
It's Cofield and Company, live from the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
All right, let's go behind the counter here at Golden Circle inside Treasure Island. Chuck Esposito, STN, is on the horn with Adam Hill, Steve Cofield. Chuck, what's up, buddy?
I'm good, boys. Just excited to be back at it. You can tell there's a different buzz in the air with preseason football going on and not that far away from week zero of college and week one of the pros. Last man standing signups in full gear. So fun time. Vacation's out of the way, and glad to be back and getting at it for the start of football season, guys.
You know, for weeks and weeks early in the WNBA season, we talked about Caitlin Clark and if the excitement around her improved handle. I saw that Shedeur Sanders, that Browns game last week, got like the highest number on NFL Network, like 2.2 million viewers, highest in like 10 years. Do you see a bump in handle when there's someone who's sort of a star, you know, not on the horizon, he's here, but did you get any bump in last week's action because of Shedeur?
Yeah, absolutely. I think anytime there's an isolated game like that and there's a player who's drawing a lot of attention, either positive, negative, just interesting to see what he or she brings to the table, it's always going to do that. I think preseason itself, you see an added, you know, kind of interest and uptick with a lot of young, talented players. But in his case, just with, you know, with what happened in the draft and the way he fell, some people thought he could be the first overall pick or at least a first-round pick, which didn't happen. Yes, we definitely saw an uptick in handle on that game.
How about if there's a preseason game in Las Vegas, right down the street from a lot of your books? Does that drive interest?
Adam, anything that's out here is always going to draw interest. It doesn't matter what sport it is. If it's, I know Steve and I have talked about this in the past. If it's Knights, Aces, Raiders, Rebels, some promotional sporting events. If you get an isolated college football game or UFC or prize fighting, it always has add something to it. And yeah, even though it's a Raider preseason game against the Niners, it's definitely going to generate some buzz and some handle here tomorrow. Early kickoff at 1 o'clock our time. A lot of Niner fans out here too. So we'll see a good uptick on that game. The game opened up, it came crashing down, and now it started going back up again. And with preseason football, it really comes down to quarterback rotations, who's in, who's out, and then you'll see some of those line moves occur because of that.
We usually only see it because of those factors. It's, you know, who's going to play starters and who the quarterbacks are and what the rotation of quarterbacks is. But in this case, the Niners do have 21, I believe, guys now that are hurt. Does depth play a factor when people are looking at preseason betting?
I think it does. I think we're in an information era, and the more information that's out there and the more that you kind of read between the lines, I think that's part of it. This is only the Raiders. This will only be the Raiders' only home game as well. In the preseason, they tied week one in that preseason road game. Their next game is on the road after this. Week one is on the road during the regular season. So I think you want to change the narrative there a little bit too and get people excited about Raider football. And I know this game opened up and, as I mentioned, came crashing down and then went back up, started to go back up again. I think you're going to see a lot of Raider action because it's their last home game for a few weeks here.
Chuck Esposito, STN, is with us. Is it too early in, you know, using the preseason to talk sharps and squares? Like, do you know what sharp action you're getting? Can you give sharp and square sides on these games?
Yeah, I think we absolutely can. You can tell because most of the small play, especially in preseason, is just more of the unsophisticated or square play. When you look at guys that are looking to see how much they can get on a preseason game, there's usually a reason behind it. I mean, we're in an information era. They've done their homework. We move games a lot faster, guys, in the preseason. There's a lot more adjustments made potentially on air in the preseason than you ever see during the regular season of pro football. But we're definitely taking that into consideration. But you can tell who's more of the casual better and who's looking for an angle or thinks they have an angle in the preseason.
KC, Seattle tonight. The Seahawks are 4.5. Is there a sharp side?
I think when you look at that game, I mean, we look at the way that it was bet so far. I mean, we opened this game at, I think it was 1.5 or 2. You saw it go all the way up to the other side, the favorite. So one side opened the favorite. Now it's the other side, the favorite. So if I'm answering your question, I'm going to say clearly the sharp side is Seattle in this game, guys.
Chuck Esposito is up with Adam Hill and Steve Cofield. Tomorrow's games, anything stick out for you in terms of premium matchups? I mean, Adam was just mentioning the injury factor. I mean, right now the Chargers, but especially the Rams, are beat to hell. Rams are catching 6.5.
Yeah, I think, you know, you look at that game, and because of the injury factor, and as we talked about earlier, you're looking at depth. I mean, the Chargers open up in this game 4.5. It's gone up a full 2 points. It's probably going to go up a little bit higher. You've seen the Broncos say that probably Bo Nix won't play in a lot of their starters. So information is key in preseason. We've seen so many games move from Miami the favorite to potentially the Lions the favorite in some places. So it's all based on that kind of information that's out there now, guys, of who's healthy, who's not, and what line moves you think you're going to see, and how aggressive we want to be with those moves. But you treat preseason way differently than you do the regular season.
I'm going to go back to the Browns and Shadur. So he's got an oblique injury, which is disappointing because I wanted to see him play in the preseason, see what he has. I also think that would give him at least a head start on Gabriel and even Pickett in terms of earning playing time at some point during the regular season. I have Shaduromania. I'm looking at your win total right now at STN, and the under's catching minus 160, under 5.5. Shadur has had no effect on the over. You're offering plus 130 on the over, 5.5. Let's go.
No effect, Steve. If you want to come in, we'll make sure we have a window open for you.
I knew you were going to say that. Like, Steve, all the money you want, baby.
Whatsoever.
Let's go.
I can't see any real scenario that he starts before week 4 to 6, even if it's catastrophic for the Browns. I think, you know, it's going to be Flacco, I would think. Do they carry 4 quarterbacks? It's an option, I guess. I mean, if you believe everything you read and hear, that there's been a lot of interest and teams wanting to trade for Dillon Gabriel, who hasn't played in the preseason, yet Shadur has. So, read between those lines a bit. And according to Cleveland, he's still 4th on their depth chart. So, no. Yeah. He did play a really good game. I was happy for him. It's still preseason. He wasn't against the A or top starters on the other side. But absolutely no impact on the line, win totals, futures, or anything at this point.
We had an interesting note come down in the world of college football. I know there are several conferences that now offer more information than they've ever offered on injuries. The Mountain West Conference is going to do it just for a conference play. They'll have, a list of questionable players 2 games out, and then game day they'll have a list probably 2 hours before kickoff. How much has that helped you behind the counter? Because especially in college football, it was very hard to get injury information, and sometimes you guys could get bitten.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I can't stress enough, guys, and it's probably the 3rd time I've said it on this short call, that we're in an information era, and the guests on the other side of the counter are doing their homework. They're dialed in. They're looking at this stuff. They're reading it, and they want to beat us to the punch like we want to beat them to the punch. We want to get that information, make the adjustments we have to make, and we know the guys on the other side of the counter are doing the exact same thing. So the more information that we can get and the more information we can get in a timely manner, it definitely benefits our side of the counter.
I'm going to go to Major League Baseball, and I'm going to put you on the spot here if you can remember. Maybe you can't, but the time to bet the Brewers was a long time ago for World Series, because they're now in the midst of another win streak. They're 76-44 on the season, and STN is dealing them, and most books are right there with you, dealing the Milwaukee Brewers at 7-1 to win the World Series. Now, you don't want to depress play on that future, but do you believe the Brewers can win the World Series?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I mean, you're asking kind of the wrong guy being a Cubs fan.
Yeah, right.
But you know, they played phenomenal. I mean, even today, they were down 8-1, and I made a comment before we got on the air. I said, don't be surprised they don't win that game, and I think it's 8-5 now. So, I mean, they're already making a little bit of a comeback in that game. They're a really good team. I like their pitching staff. I think they've got an outstanding manager. We've seen the last couple of years when the postseason rolls around, they're a little bit different. But hey, they're playing great right now. But looking at baseball as a whole, I can tell you is after that first maybe 4 to 6 weeks of the season where I thought it was going to be really one-sided, you're going to have a handful of teams that dominate. We've seen so much parity. You've seen the Phillies have some struggles, the Mets, the Yankees, the Cubs, the Dodgers, which are all good things for our side of the counter when you get more parity. So this year, more than I can remember over the last few years, we've been on probably a good 10 to 12 week pace with a lot more parity in MLB than I can remember ever seeing over the last 10 years.
Well, baseball is in full swing and basketball's back. We've got the schedule now. It popped up. Was there anything that stood out on the schedule in terms of what could be interesting in betting markets going forward with the NBA season on the horizon?
Yeah, I think a lot based on what teams did in the offseason, guys. You know, I mean, I love the opener with the Rockets and OKC and then the Warriors and Lakers. But I think a lot of it's that. We're going to make our numbers, and we actually have the Christmas Day numbers up as well, where you have the five games on Christmas Day and some intriguing matchups too. But see how good the Lakers will be and what does LeBron have left, how good this young OKC team going to be, who's going to dominate in the East with the injuries, you know, with Boston and some big injuries there in Indiana. Is this the year that the Knicks kind of take the next step? So a lot of things to look at. It's really early right now, but it's fun talking about this stuff because it was a long, hot summer with just baseball, and knowing that the start of football season's around the corner and NHL and NBA isn't too far after is good stuff for our side of the counter.
Chuck, let's talk about contests and also the deposit match bonus that you guys have going on.
Yep, the deposit match bonus is up to a $50 no-worry wager. So you make a $50 bet, you hit that no-worry wager, you win it, terrific. You lose it, up to $50, we're going to give you that money back. So that's kind of a nice little benefit. And contest, last man standing, college and pro, both are our signature contests, guys. I think what's cool about it is a $25 entry fee gets you one entry. $100 gets you four and a bonus fifth entry. Now, there's some great contests out there with high entry fees and great prizes. But for a small investment in these, you can really have a nice payday. They're aggregate payouts, but the pro football one is $150K. The college one's $100K. So, again, for a very small amount, you can have a really nice payday. So get signed up today at any of our books for Last Man Standing, college and pro.
Good convo as always, Chuck. We appreciate it. Have a good weekend.
All right, guys. You too. Thanks.
There he is, Chuck Esposito, STN. You are not a contest guy.
I do love Last Man Standing.
Yes, there's a long history there with ESPN sure. Las Vegas. I'm not even sure you can enter them, can you? You really can't talk about them, right? Can you not because of the job?
Yeah.
Okay. Fantasy football, though, I overheard a conversation the other day. How many leagues are you slated? Has it gone up since I actually heard you say, I thought you said 81.
Yeah, including best ball and things like that.
What is best ball?
You just do a draft in the off season, and there's no lineups, there's no substitutions.
Oh,
so
wow.
Like basically you have four quarterbacks, like six or seven receivers, six or seven running backs, and then whatever your optimal lineup is each week just automatically gets set after the games are played.
Back to baseball. We are going to talk to the voice of baseball in Las Vegas, Matt Neverett. We'll get into the Brewers. We'll get into the National League. Dodgers-Padres are starting off the series. You want to talk about a massive series. The freaking Padres are up on the Dodgers by a game. I wonder if it's all due, or a lot of it, to the trade deadline when the Pod Squad was really active and Dodgers did almost nothing.